Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Victor Verkaman is the Vice President of Risk and Chief Compliance Officer at Giant Eagle Incorporated. He leads teams dedicated to food safety, healthcare compliance, and environmental health while also providing counsel and guidance across the company's various business disciplines. Dr. Verkaman joined Giant Eagle in 2018 as the Senior Director of Pharmacy Quality and Compliance. Prior to this, he served as the Vice President of Quality Assurance and Regulatory Affairs for Genco and as the Director of Pharmacy Professional Services and Government Relations at SuperValue. Dr. Verkaman earned his Doctor of Pharmacy degree from the University of Illinois at Chicago and completed the GSK Executive Management Program for Pharmacy Leaders at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. He is a member of the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and is a registered pharmacist in four states. Hello, Dr. Verkaman. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hi, Paul. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Vic, it's been a long time, and I'm so glad that you and I were able to reconnect and rekindle the relationship that we've had for quite some time. And you've been a remarkable leader in the pharmacy profession. So I know that the audience today is really going to enjoy hearing all about what you do and how you've gotten to where you are today and what you see for the future for the rest of our listeners today as well. Now, Vic, I know there's many of our listeners today that may be meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Sure. So I'm Victor Verkaman. I currently serve as the Vice President of Risk and the Chief Compliance Officer for Giant Eagle Incorporated. That's a regional supermarket, fuel, convenience store, and pharmacy retailer. We're in five states, stretching from Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Maryland, and operate in a variety of formats. As I mentioned, a convenience store, gas station. We also operate full-service supermarkets with contemporary community pharmacies there, specialty pharmacy business. And we also have support businesses such as a commissary that will make ready-to-eat soups, salads, other products, and a number of distribution centers that also support all of our stores. And while I certainly started my career as a pharmacist in the community, I've had some interesting opportunities, and I now support food safety, environmental health and safety, healthcare compliance, as well as consumer privacy and patient privacy matters for that company.
Vic, you sound like you wear a lot of hats, and I'm going to assume that you have a team of qualified, intelligent, and very, very sharp team members as well that are helping you in this. How many members are on your team? Tell us a little bit about your team and who that's comprised of and what their day-to-day looks like as well.
Sure. And absolutely. I mean, I never claim to do this alone. I'm very fortunate to have a group of high performing professionals supporting me, you know, in everything that we do. So I have three senior leaders that report directly to me. But then when we include all of our staff out in the field, We have upwards of 80 people in total that support food safety, including direct, you know, relationships with regulators, as well as you know, any sanitation or, you know, food purity efforts, as well as healthcare compliance and OSHA or, you know, environmental health and safety type compliance matters. So, as I mentioned, definitely could not do it by myself. I do my best to provide them the support where needed and then stay out of the way, quite frankly. So fortunate to have a great group.
It sounds like a true leadership quality, which we're going to actually delve into quite a bit in this conversation, Victor. For the audience members that are listening today that are, may not have had the opportunity to either visit a Giant Eagle store or have had the opportunity to purchase something at a convenience store, let me kind of share a little bit of background and context about the organization. This is a company that's been around for roughly 85, close to 90 years. It's one of the largest family-owned and operated companies in the United States. There's over 36,000 employees in 480 stores. As Victor mentioned, they are in five states, right? Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Maryland, and Indiana. It was actually ranked number 36 on Forbes' list of America's largest private companies last year. And it's won numerous awards, not just in years past, but this year as well. I was watching your website and you had an understanding of the fact that Giant Eagle Inc. was not received the 2022 Best Place to Work for both Disability Equality and LGBTQ+ Equality. It's also won multiple awards as an Employer of the Year by companies such as Goodwill Industries. And it's also racked up quite a reputation for winning several awards in Women in Business Awards. But I think one of the things that really sticks out for me when I think about your organization are your six core values. The three of the six that really jumped out to me were respect all, live well, and do right. And we're going to try and tap into that a little bit in our conversation as well, Victor. But, you know, when I hear the way that Giant Eagle is structured and, you know, how it understands its community and how it understands its customers in order to be able to provide value and services in these different qualities and in these different areas is really remarkable. But Victor, before we even go there, I think the first burning question that most of my audience members are going to have is, you're a pharmacist, and you've mentioned that you're doing a lot of compliance and risk for non-pharmacy areas, food in particular. And it's not very common that you will hear this sort of transition. Sure, healthcare professionals, you know, do a great job in terms of providing patient care, but then when they do pivot, they kind of stay very close to that, you know, to the center for them. But you know, this is kind of a big jump. And you know, again, it's rare to hear about these opportunities that arise. I'd really like to have an understanding about how that pivot took place for you. Was that something that was like always, you know, in the back of your mind that, you know, we're just going to go from pharmacy to, you know, food safety and other areas of a convenience and a grocery store? That story is just the first thing that I have to ask. So Victor, please do share with me a little bit about how that shift occurred and how you've been able to navigate these types of waters to lead you to where you are today.
Sure. And you know, first off, you know, I still do have at least one foot firmly, you know, in healthcare compliance and support. So while it's only part of my role today, certainly, you know, my team and myself, we work diligently to, and I think you asked earlier, you know, what my role contributes to taking healthcare higher. You know, we feel very strongly that pharmacists should be permitted to practice at the top of their licenses. And really what that process means, you know, we engage both the professionals in our pharmacies, elected officials and regulators, you know, as we seek to describe, you know, what we are able to do, how we're able to solve various healthcare problems, particularly, you know, directly in the community. You know, as you know, and I'm sure as other guests have alluded to, you know, most people see their pharmacists much more often than other healthcare professionals, you know, on an ongoing basis. And we're conveniently located, right? I mean, our pharmacies are located within community supermarkets that, you know, are a significant hub for people. So, you know, a little bit about how one, you know, made the transition to where I am today. You know, truthfully, no, I did not have a master plan to end up here. was much more iterative. Certainly, you know, as we all train as pharmacists, you know, you learn a lot about, for example, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, right? So it's a U.S. federal regulation that governs, as the name suggests, you know, the quality and purity of food products, you know, drugs, both non-prescription and prescription drugs, and cosmetics. And while, you know, most pharmacists will dwell predominantly, you know, in the drug section of that act, you know, understanding their responsibilities to not only guide patient care, but obviously be good stewards of, you know, the prescription products that they handle. It does give you a bit of a launching, you know, point into some of those other adjacent products that also need to be pure, safe, right, and free from contamination, that sort of thing. So I was given an opportunity to branch out from, you know, community pharmacy practice and that support into more of a logistics and business-to-business support through a different company, a career path I had pursued after my initial work with community pharmacy. And that really, you know, challenged me, frankly, to grow and become much more knowledgeable about some of those adjacent areas. And that really propelled me forward into understanding more about how, you know, food safety can be structured, right? How those compliance strategies can come into play, as well as things like safe workplace, even including some matters such as interstate transport of commodities, especially things that are potentially hazardous. These were not things that certainly I learned early on, you know, in my pharmacy career. But, you know, once you take on the challenge of, you know, self-study and personal development, you know, it becomes, you know, it just becomes an ongoing, you know, personal development situation. So the one thing I would end with is, you know, regarding that topic is you may not know where you're going to end up. And it's often a different place than where you started. So I think, you know, learning how to harness that lifelong learning and that intellectual curiosity can often help carry you from, you know, spot to spot. So while where I am today, you know, is very far removed from the community pharmacist that I began as, you know, when you look at some of the commonalities relating to, you know, keeping people safe, keeping products safe, always an eye on being a good steward of the resources that are in front of us. There are some commonalities, and I think you can, you know, start to see how one might, you know, pursue a career path along those lines.
Vic, it's got to be remarkable to see the changes that you and I have seen over the course of 3-ish decades, you know, especially from a healthcare perspective, right? And a lot of the things that we see today, you know, no matter who you are as a pharmacist, a nurse, a physician, some of it has been reactive, right? Of course, obviously, now that we're operating in a post-pandemic world, you know, a lot of things have been, you know, introduced into the way that healthcare operates and the way that community members and patients today require services and also products. When you think about how Giant Eagle has been able to step in today to address new problems or even long-term existing challenges for your customers and for your patients, is there something that really sticks out to you when you think, you know, nobody else saw this as an issue, but we see it so much that we know our patients and our customers would be better off if we did something about it? And maybe something very recently where you've been able to say, because of the efforts that we've taken, this is how it's been a value add, and this is how it's helped save our patients time, money. I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the success that Giant Eagle has been able to accomplish, maybe within the last year or two. And again, in a world that's so different now than it was 3 years ago, lots of new challenges, so lots of creativity as well.
Yeah, I would say I consider myself fortunate to have found an organization like Giant Eagle. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, describing some of our operation, I would say that we're large enough to have a lot of the resources that would be necessary to do interesting things while also being small enough that we can remain, you know, somewhat nimble and able to effectively react, you know, and respond to changing market conditions. I would say, you know, the pandemic in particular, it didn't necessarily create new opportunities, but it accelerated opportunities very rapidly. And some things that come to mind, you know, we always had, you know, the capability to support mobile ordering. You know, we did have a shopper's app, for example. You know, we also within pharmacy, you know, had that capability. You know, we did have meal kits and some of those other offerings. But as the pandemic started to take hold, and as we realized that we were going to see some change in shopper behavior, really forced, you know, by necessity through some of the quarantining and, you know, limited business activities, it really pushed a lot of those shopper choices to the forefront, right? So we then needed to dramatically increase our capability to do things like curbside pickup, you know, for example. We had that as an offering, but we had to scale that and deploy that across our operation. You know, similarly, you know, as we later, you know, became able to provide, you know, COVID vaccinations through our pharmacy teams, we had to wrestle with, you know, how do we handle the large volumes of folks that, you know, were desiring to obviously receive the vaccinations? And then, you know, were we potentially able to be a partner in the community to help other groups with mass immunization solutions? So, you know, something that the pharmacy team at Giant Eagle should take great pride in, we conducted in cooperation with the Pittsburgh Steelers mass immunization events at, I'm going to call it Heinz Field. I mean, now it's Acrisure Stadium, but if there are any Pittsburgh Steeler fans out there, I have a feeling for lots of people it will remain Heinz Field for a while. But at that time, it was Heinz Field, conducted mass immunization clinics there, allowing people a very convenient location to obtain, you know, those needed vaccinations to, you know, to help provide a sense of increasing normalcy. You know, get schools operational, a lot of the things that, you know, a large community needs to have happen. So I would say a lot of these, some people call it omni-channel. You know, I would really say it's, you know, we want to do everything we can to meet our guest, our pharmacy patient, you know, whoever is, you know, visiting us for whatever need they have, that we're able to meet them where they want to be. Want to be met, right? Whether that's in store, whether that's through convenient pickup alternatives, whether it's through technology, you know, through delivery, you know, things of that nature. And I think the pandemic really showed us what we could accomplish in a short amount of time when, you know, under immense pressure. And I would say that a lot of those innovations, you know, remain today. You know, we continue to have a very strong curbside business. Our digital presence continues to strengthen, and you know, we're creating additional shopper excitement through a lot of those. And then we also continue to look at ways that we can make the community pharmacy experience more convenient while retaining, you know, that personal touch of the pharmacist. That's important.
I love that. And Victor, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think sometimes we have a tendency to become so obsessed with what's in front of us that we're not able to consider what else is right around the corner. And, you know, when you think about patient needs and patient preferences, it's important that an organization recognize where services can be added or products in a way that is convenient, but it's also effective. You know, as pharmacists, we both know counseling is a strong role in terms of patient education. But when there are limitations in terms of either communication or visibility or access, that can severely limit the outcomes that we want to see in our patients. You know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the world that you live in, which is risk and compliance. And as you know, I'm sure you'll agree, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. As a pharmacist, I've always felt that pharmacy is probably the most regulated profession in the country. There are so many aspects of what we do today, and for good reason, that, you know, federal, state, local regulations really guide the way that we are able to perform in certain states, in certain locales, and what we can do. And because of that is, you know, many of the things that you deal with on a daily basis, I'm confident that your interactions with the regulatory agencies, other individuals that are working to advance the work that we do in healthcare, you know, there's a lot of things that we have learned to be able to adapt to, whether it's by including technology or changing processes. But there are also other things that are coming in the near future in order that will have an impact on the way that we provide patient and pharmaceutical care. What are things that that listeners today on this show should be aware of that's really been talked about within the last maybe 12 to 18 months that you feel is going to either shift the way that risk and compliance is going to be moderated or measured within the pharmacy setting or within community healthcare types of outlets that healthcare providers really need to pay attention to and be aware of so when the change does come, it's not a total shock?
Yeah, a couple of things that occur to me, and some of these are applicable to many, you know, health professions, not just pharmacy, but I think pharmacy has some good examples of this. You know, the public continues to desire what I'll call self-help solutions, right? Where there is a desire to find out more, you know, on a personal basis about, you know, perhaps a disease state or, you know, living in a healthier way or getting more information about, you know, the foods or, you know, the nutritionals or, you know, the medications that a person may be taking. And, you know, I believe that we all need to be very mindful that there's nothing wrong with self-help and there's nothing wrong with a patient becoming more empowered and becoming more knowledgeable about, you know, their care. We should be encouraging that. But we also need to recognize that, you know, there are many potential outlets to receive that information today, some of which are very ethical and very, you know, professional and fact-based. But there's also, you know, many sources that don't derive, you know, the information necessarily from a, you know, a scientific rigor or, you know, medical literature perspective. Instead, it's more of a curated peer review or opinion, you know, process. And sometimes, you know, it does not provide all of the comprehensive information one might need to make, you know, a clear decision. And some of the information may not be comprehensive. And we need to recognize there are risks, you know, when we have patients that are out there, not certain, you know, what the reliability of a given, you know, information source may be. So I think we need to strike a balance between helping our patients empower themselves while also continuing to be, you know, good judges of what is quality information, what can really help, you know, strengthen a patient's knowledge, as opposed to reinforcing certain biases or beliefs, or providing information in a very limited fashion that doesn't always, you know, answer all of the comprehensive questions, you know, in the best way.
Victor, when I hear you talk about that, I see a disparity in generations when I hear this topic, right? When I was as an older individual, even, you know, for those in the Generation X category like myself, like there's a stronger tendency to lean more towards face-to-face personal interactions so that when education is shared, it's more meaningful. But then I look at my son, who's a millennial and a Gen Y. And then I also see students that I speak to, you know, that are in the Gen Z category that are, you know, more apt to go towards the technological mediums and platforms. And I think, you know, the challenge for your organization, as well as everyone else, is how do we make sure that the quality of that type of education and information is universal? And, you know, there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot of conversations about what, you know, learning modalities might need to look like and how the experts are going to be able to ensure that the message is universal and standardized across the platforms. But it's going to be very interesting to see that. I mean, I kind of think about what my grandkids are going to be like in 10 years. They are now 2 years old. So when they are 12, it will be very interesting to see how they consume and leverage information in this category. It's just going to be interesting.
Yeah, and I would also add that, you know, the what sometimes gets missed when you're looking exclusively, you know, either social media or other, you know, technological tools, you know, medical science, you know, pharmaceutical science, you know, the healing professions, they are very expert, but they're not always, you know, black and white, right? They're not always cut and dry. And what can often be frustrating for people that are seeking a definitive answer, you know, if they go online, they may be left with an impression that, you know, this sounds more like a probably or a maybe. And, you know, that's really where some of the clinical experience that's gained through, you know, years of observing patients, right, caring for patients, looking at outcomes in real time, can help gain that perspective of, yes, you know, this particular scenario does not have a clean, you know, definitive answer. You know, we have to layer in things like a risk benefit analysis, right? Where you as a patient and you as a clinician, you're taking on some risk, you know, moving forward down a particular path. And the patient has to recognize that, yes, you know, there is likely, you know, a positive outcome at the end of this journey, but there's still some risk and we may not, you know, obtain the outcome that we hope for. We believe we will, right? And the chances are strong. But, you know, I think that as we lose some of that human interaction and some of that peer review, you know, it can be challenging because, you know, we've seen some of that, you know, with some of the CDC data, you know, some of the other data that was shared, particularly around things like the COVID vaccinations. Those of us that were very familiar, you know, with medical literature and how studies are constructed and how initial data can flow, none of that was surprising to us. But then when that was amplified into the public square, as it were, you know, it became extremely confusing for people. They're like, you know, what do you mean this is normal, right? You know, you thought they were 93 to 98% effective, and now you're saying they're, you know, falling into, you know, the high 90s. You know, those of us that have been immunizing and involved in that for a long time, you know, even 90 is outstanding. But, you know, for a layperson that's somewhat new to this process, you know, I can see how that can be frustrating, particularly if you don't have that, you know, human interaction perspective where you have, you know, a trusted physician, you know, pharmacist, nurse, who's able to share some of their experiences gained over years.
That's good insight, Vic. And I'm sure that there will be, you know, I'm sure that there are listeners today that can empathize and resonate with that, whether they themselves are either new in their career or have family members that they struggle with communicating the, let me share with you what we know and why the, you know, what the pushback that can come from that. So I really appreciate you bringing this into the conversation. Vic, I'd like to shift the conversation a little bit and talk more about you. As I mentioned before, like you've had such a very interesting career. And for those of you that, you know, want, you certainly can find Vic on LinkedIn, but you know, I find your career trajectory very remarkable. Today, you're the Vice President of Risk and you're the Chief Compliance Officer at Giant Eagle. You've held many senior director and senior director level roles within the organization prior to saying yes to this role. But before that, you were the Vice President of Strategy and Industry Relations at Supply Logics LLC. Before that, you were the Vice President of Quality Assurance and Regulatory Affairs at Genco. And even before that, you were a Director of Pharmacy Professional Services and Government Relations at SuperValue. So you've had the opportunity to move up the career ladder in different areas with different companies. And I'm sure that for every opportunity that was ever presented to you, there was a moment of pause that was necessary for you to recognize, was this the best step for you in terms of advancing your career? I'm sure each opportunity presented something different and that maybe something was necessary at that stage. But when you think about the role that you hold now, you know, you've been in this role within this area of risk and compliance for quite some time, but moving into a VP role requires a lot of different responsibilities and a lot of different skills with a lot of different challenges. And I'd like to know a little bit about, you know, what your thought process was when this opportunity did become available. Was this an automatic yes for you that, you know, obviously with the previous role as a senior director, maybe you had outgrown it and that this was going to present a new challenge that you were ready for? Or maybe there were some concerns that you had before you said yes. And we'd like to hear a little bit about that, because I feel that many times when a position is presented to a healthcare professional or a healthcare executive, instinctually people will say yes because it's the next step. But there are factors that really need to be weighed properly. And I'd like to know what your decision-making process looked like as you've progressed in each of these stages of your career.
Yeah, I would say, you know, as I reflect on my career path and a number of the opportunities that I've been presented, I think what I would, you know, be thinking about as I, you know, decided whether to take a chance, let's say, I think over time, and I didn't have this insight in the beginning. I don't want the viewership to think that, you know, I've always had this self-awareness. But, you know, over time, you know, as you get to understand a bit more about yourself, right, as a leader, as a lifelong learner, you know, as both a member of a team or, you know, in those leadership capabilities, how you lead teams and influence people, you know, it's important, you know, to have some colleagues or mentors that you can trust who will give you feedback on, you know, how well you're doing. Or if you're fortunate enough, you may find someone who will also help, you know, give you insights into some of your talents that you may or may not be aware of, as well as some of those derailers, right, that you may need to watch out for and work on. So over time, I was able to develop a healthy understanding of some of my derailers and also some of my strengths and how those could be harnessed, you know, to help either lead functions, you know, lead teams, you know, as I move forward. And I would say that, you know, if you can get to a point where you really start to have a good sense of self-confidence and self-awareness, that then allows you to evaluate some of these opportunities, you know, in a very clear-eyed way, where you can say, do I have something to contribute to this particular opportunity? Am I actually going to either help the organization or help the teams that are impacted? Is there something that I'm going to learn and develop, you know, as an individual as a result of this? To me, I believe firmly that, you know, a two-way street is critical, where I can say that each opportunity I've had, I may not have known everything going in. In fact, I, you know, quite frankly, did not have all of the knowledge necessary. But I had, you know, perhaps a good head start, but then also an understanding of what it might take for me to obtain, right? Either through working with colleagues or continued on the job training or more formal review of literature or things of that nature to kind of fill those gaps that you know, that you have going into, you know, that new opportunity. So, you know, to look at the most recent opportunity, you know, I started as a healthcare compliance leader for Giant Eagle, which was an area that I knew extremely well. At the time, I did not draw upon my prior work history and work experience on matters like, you know, food safety, cosmetic safety, OSHA, you know, environmental health and safety type matters. But then when the pandemic came upon us, you know, when we pulled together a cross-functional team, it became clear that, you know, I was able to draw upon some of my past experience. And then the organization determined, you know, that I was not just a pharmacy compliance leader, that I had other skills that might be helpful. And that's really how that conversation started. And, you know, at that point, I think the other thing when you talk about, you know, what is a vice president, or you know, what does that entail, or what does that type of senior leadership entail? I think the other thing that over time you come to realize, if you're a leader of people and a leader of functions, doesn't necessarily mean that you are the best at each of those functions. And in many cases, you know, a leader that's coordinating activities across many areas, I mean, it's not possible for me to be, you know, the most expert in all of them. But I am knowledgeable in all of the areas sufficient to be able to support my team, to be able to identify talent, you know, within the organization, the people that are working to help me, as well as, you know, understand, you know, the resources needed to do those jobs effectively. You become much more of a facilitator. You know, and a gatherer of resources, and you know, there's a bit of organizational leadership and management, right, that comes into play, where you know, I need the people on my team to focus on, you know, their portfolios. And then I'm able to, you know, work more on organizational resources, you know, budgeting, planning, always with an eye toward understanding what each of my folks has, you know, as far as challenges in front of them. But, you know, when I joined the team as the VP of risk, I told each of my subordinates, I said, I'm not going to sit here and try to convince you, you know, that I understand your role better than you do, because I don't. And that's not why I'm here. You know, why I am here is to help you continue to invest, you know, in the important work that you do. I do know enough that you don't have to explain everything to me, you know, but that we can instead partner, you know, in moving the organizations forward, continuing to protect, you know, our communities and so forth. So I would say the two things that stand out, understanding that you're not necessarily the best doer, you know, as you rise and gain additional responsibility. And then I think you do have to have a clear sense of your capabilities, where those gaps are, and then at least have the initial plan. You know, how are you going to close some of those gaps in, you know, knowledge or experience to be able to, you know, accomplish that next challenge?
We'll be right back after this short break.
Vic, you just mentioned a few moments ago about needing or having mentors and sponsors that really start you off in the right direction by giving you some insights, some feedback, and really just kind of helping you see the world that you're just not privy to because you lack the experience at that time. Is there an individual or two that you'd like to publicly acknowledge for some of the leadership and some of the onus that they took upon themselves to help guide you to where you are today?
Yes. You know, first off, I have been privileged. I've had a number of folks that, you know, took time to invest in me. And, you know, I do try to give back, you know, as much as I can to folks that are coming, you know, coming up, you know, through the profession, as well as, you know, through our business operations. But one person that stands out in particular is Chris Demos. At the time, you know, he was president of Super Value Pharmacies. He and I, you know, worked together a number of years, and I would say that, you know, he was and is a unique leader who not only pushes someone, you know, probably in directions that are uncomfortable, quite frankly, for that individual. But I think more importantly, you know, is able to see potential where the individual may not see it themselves. You know, and I think back, there were a number of opportunities where, you know, as I started down the path of, you know, increased responsibilities, particularly, you know, at Super Value Pharmacies, where, you know, he would make a suggestion that, you know, I may want to consider, for example, there's one role in particular. I moved out of pharmacy operations into managed care. And for those of you that are familiar, while managed care, you know, has a lot of influence in pharmacy operations, they're not necessarily skill sets that, you know, overlap, you know, to any great degree. After I took his advice and, you know, applied and received a, you know, a role in the managed care team, extremely uncomfortable, right? Felt unprepared. But over time, I realized that was precisely why, you know, Chris had encouraged me and really, you know, pressured me in a sense to really calm my fears and make the leap. Knowing that while I didn't have a lot of didactic knowledge in that area, you know, I did have the ability to look at, you know, those things that I did not know, seek out, you know, reputable sources so that I could grow, and then, you know, really added additional perspective to, you know, for me, because obviously managed care is one of those areas that, you know, impacts not only pharmacy, all of healthcare, but, you know, critical part of understanding the overall, you know, patient care, economics, you know, business lenses, right, that that pharmacy has to operate through. We did have the privilege of reconnecting, you know, at a later company as well, where, you know, similar situation encouraged me to take some chances, which again, you know, it's a good combination of recognizing some of the skills that I, you know, potentially have, but then also that confidence to say, you know, I believe that you can do this, right? So take the leap, you know, trust in yourself in a sense. And I think back that, you know, there were some critical milestones that it was definitely a part of, and definitely appreciate that. And, you know, I'm fortunate that, you know, we continue to be networked and connect and catch up, you know, occasionally, even though, you know, our career paths have diverged a little bit, but still, you know, and I think another thing I might want to add, and I think you and I are a good example of this also, you know, as folks build, you know, their networks, professional networks, it is important, you know, to stay in touch, especially if you don't really need anything. You know, that's always healthy. But I also think it's just as healthy to recognize that, you know, people have lives that are very complex. They have a lot of things that are going on. And I don't look at an expiration date on a network, right? So if it's been some time, you know, that you've connected with a colleague or a past colleague or a classmate, you know, whoever it may be, what I would say is, you know, if you're the one reaching out, you know, go ahead and give that a try, right? Refresh the connection, even though it's been a while. And if you're on the receiving end, you know, I would say be gracious, you know, understand that, you know, the person may or may not, you know, have been able to connect with you or refresh that connection at the time that may have seemed natural. And, you know, circumstances, you know, have changed where, you know, they're able to now. And, you know, I think that's helpful, right? Because particularly, you know, we move across the country, you know, we have interesting opportunities, you know, some people are, you know, working for an employer, some people are consulting, you know, there's just all sorts of ways that you can contribute to, you know, the profession and healthcare, you know, as a business as well. And, you know, I think a little bit of grace, you know, to say, hey, I haven't heard from you in a while, but it's great to hear from you. You know, I think that goes a long way.
I'm glad that you said that, Vic, because I think that sometimes I've come across individuals that always believe that there's an ulterior motive to why, you know, there's been such a gap in our communication, and all of a sudden I'm hearing from you. And sometimes it literally is just, you know, a sudden moment of free time. And maybe, you know, you've been on their mind for months or years, but you've just never had the opportunity to do that. And that was it. And I think that it's really helpful to hear, like, have a bit of grace, say yes. Just, you never know when that relationship can be rekindled. I love, you know, rekindling some old relationships, especially with people I graduated with from pharmacy school, because it's just remarkable to see how they think about their role today, which is, you know, in my case, like 20, 25 years after graduation. Like, yeah, this was just something that just fell into my lap, but let me just tell you, I'm happy I'm doing it. And you get to learn through even a 10, 15 minute catch up in terms of how life has been treating that person and how they've been able to ride the wave, so to speak. And I think that that's great if you have that ability to just say, you know, I just want to hear what's going on. And I think that's phenomenal. Vic, when you think about your future from a professional perspective, like, how do you, you know, what are some goals that you've set for yourself today when you think that, hey, if Iqbal were to call me again in, let's just say, like, early 2024, and would say, Vic, I remember when you were on my show and we talked about a bunch of things, and you mentioned that you were really focusing your efforts and time to achieve this. And in 2024, I call you up and I would say, Vic, did you ever do that? What is that professional goal that you've set for yourself that over the next maybe 12, 15 months, you hope to be able to achieve?
Yeah, one thing that stands out, and again, I think with the benefit of time and the benefit of perspective, you understand the value of some of these things. I recently joined the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics, which is an international group devoted to excellence in those areas, right? And really cultivating leadership skill, competence, and collaboration. And my goal I reflected and realized, you know, I've invested a lot of time in a career that has supported compliance, ethics, quality in a variety of environments. And it might be valuable to establish a certification in that area. Not that I'm not competent, not that I'm not qualified. I certainly am. But I also realize that I know that, right? And the organizations that I'm working with know that. But other stakeholders might not know that. And I felt that, you know, it was a personal development milestone for me. So I'm in the process of studying to take the Certified Compliance and Ethics Professional examination, which essentially, you know, provides a, you know, an independent assessment of, you know, my educational skills, my work experience, you know, and my ability to apply those effectively. And really, I look at that as, you know, an external sign that, you know, I do meet, you know, the international standards and I am capable. And, you know, I feel that that would be, you know, a credit to what I've accomplished, but then also provide my company, you know, something to point to say that, you know, they have credentialed individuals supporting them. And I think more importantly, some of those other stakeholders, whether it may be, for example, you know, insurance companies that we do business with, other trading partners we do business with, that again, while, you know, my team and I, you know, we're aware of our qualifications and our competencies, I think that certification process can definitely help, you know, set a solid foundation for members of a team like mine.
Vic, I got to tell you, I'm really glad that you mentioned certifications, but more specifically in an area where you've already have the competency developed and based on experience. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, when I've spoken with other guests in the past and even other clients that I work with now and before, you know, there's always this consideration of, you know, what value will certification bring for me? Usually it's more of a mindset of this should open a brand new door for me so that I can get into a new area. But I think what's really helpful to understand is, you know, the way that you described is very accurate and very eye-opening in the sense that when you're meeting somebody who has never met you before, it shortens the time frame to be able to build trust and confidence in working with you. And again, as you pointed out, like you have years, maybe decades of experience within, you know, in this area of compliance, but that certification is that instant recognition from an external perspective to be able to say, I can trust this person now, and he's going to consistently validate it through the work that we're going to do moving forward. And I'm really excited. How long is the studying going to take? Or I'm sure it's probably already well underway. And when is the exam for you?
So I have not formally scheduled it, but I'm planning in the first calendar quarter. So hopefully by spring, you know, I'll have that completed. But the study and those other parts are well underway. There is an opportunity to sit for it late January, but then there is another opportunity later, you know, that late winter, early spring. And depending on my confidence level, and again, you know, it's there is a formal examination part of it. You know, you're right that I do have decades of experience, but, you know, also want to be properly prepared and make sure that, you know, the scope of information on the exam is, you know, familiar. So, you know, it's almost like going back to school in a sense, which I'm happy to do.
Wow. I think you and I might differ on that. I don't ever want to go back to school just because I, you know, have such little bandwidth in so many spaces. Is this a self-study that you will be performing, or are you actually enrolling in a structured program with other cohorts to be able to learn the information and be ready for the exam?
Yeah, this particular situation is predominantly self-study, and then do have the opportunity to attend webinar instruction or live seminars to help strengthen capabilities in certain areas. But for the most part, self-study. So yeah, it's all on me.
Well, as long as your family member is willing to acknowledge that you'll be spending less time with them for the next few weeks or maybe a few months, but you know, they know what's best for you and what's also what's best for them. And I think it's going to be a fantastic opportunity, Vic. I certainly look forward to congratulating you and you shared that news that you are now a certified professional in this area. I think it's going to be great.
Thanks. Thank you. We'll check in soon.
Absolutely. Vic, you also mentioned earlier about, you know, leadership and the responsibility that you have. You I love the statement that you said, like, my job is to help people, understand where they want to go and then let them and get out of their way, right? But at the same time, as their leader, you're also responsible for cultivating, nurturing, and developing them in areas where they may or may not already be competent in or experts in. Just like you and I, we consistently grow and develop our leadership acumen through a variety of resources. Maybe they are books, maybe they are conferences, maybe they are videos, and maybe they are, just a variety of different electronic, digital, or in-person media. I'd love to understand a little bit about some of the influences that you've allowed to help shape you into the leader that you are, and ones that you recommend to others. Is there a particular speaker, author, book, or video that you would recommend, or that you do recommend to your teams today, and that you would recommend to listeners of this podcast to help them along their leadership journey as well?
So there are a few things that come to mind. I mean, I think if you know me by now, I don't have one thing. I fancy myself to be intellectually curious, and I like to consume information, from a variety of places. I'll come at this from a couple different areas. If you're someone in healthcare, whether it's pharmacy specifically, and this particular source, is somewhat focused on pharmacy, but I think some of the concepts, particularly the economic concepts, could amplify to other healthcare situations. Drugchannels.net, who is Adam Fine, is a economist who is very, very gifted at boiling down very complex pharmacoeconomic issues, looking at things like, for example, 340B, the impact of pharmacy benefit managers, consolidation, merger and acquisition, really does a great job of amplifying a number of business subjects, right? So if you're a practitioner who's engaged in direct patient care, maybe you don't have a lot of opportunity to get involved in some of the economics or the business aspects. I think he's an excellent source where you can go to that site. He publishes regularly, and it's very easy to follow information, regarding various economic topics. And I think for someone who wants to figure out how can I start to figure out some of the, the business challenges that, whether you're a community pharmacist, a health system pharmacist, but also, I think pharmacy, there are a lot of corollaries for other health professionals. So I wouldn't just limit drugchannels.net to, a pharmacist. I would say that there's something in there for physicians, understanding things like prior authorization, utilization controls, all of those sorts of things. I think he's a great source, and I would recommend that, drugchannels.net. As far as books, as you noted, in my past, I've had the privilege of leading quality managers and quality engineers, and then also folks that deal in compliance matters. I would say if you're someone who's working in kind of a quality-centric area, a book that I recommend frequently, and I like it a lot, is The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. It really delves into highly educated individuals. Highly developed individuals can still benefit from things like checklists, right? To keep processes on track, to highlight those areas of risk or deviation. And I think it's a very compact read, highly focused, but definitely, in a healthcare environment, can help people view quality, through a slightly different lens. If you're someone who is emerging in leadership, particularly if you're in what's termed a matrix management structure, where you may have a primary supervisor, but you may also have to exert your influence or work with areas that don't report directly to you. A book that I like is The Art of Wu. The Art of Wu is Richard Schell and Mario Musa. That actually has nothing to do with healthcare, but it has everything to do with how you can try to perceive motivations of people? What are those motivators that they possess? And how can you look at, you know, your ability to communicate, your ability to message and influence them? And, you know, kind of that path of, I don't want to say what's in it for me, because that boils it down to, you know, in much too much of an elemental. It's much more than that. But, you know, that's one of the concepts is, you know, can you put yourself in their shoes? Can you become a more effective, you know, negotiator in a sense, right? Because we all, you know, every business interaction, every business relationship, you know, really every personal relationship, you know, there's some bit of negotiation, right? Whether it's personal life or business life. So The Art of Woo is another book that I recommend, particularly for those folks that, you know, are starting off trying to figure out, you know, I was in a meeting and, you know, I couldn't really get anybody to understand, you know, the importance of my issue or my topic, or I couldn't get, you know, support on a deadline. That book really can help you gain some insights into how you might modify your message, you know, to become a more effective leader of change.
These are phenomenal recommendations, Vic. I've not heard the last two before. And so I will definitely be adding that to my list. And I encourage all of my listeners to, if you're not a book reader, find it on Audible, because that's typically where I will find and consume most of my information as well. So thank you for that. That's very helpful. Vic, we, you know, you've also talked about, you know, qualities in your team and qualities in individuals that you look for from a leadership development perspective. And I'd really like to know, and I think that my audience would value, you know, benefit from this, is that, you know, when you have opportunities on your team or opportunities within the company, even if it's not within your team, but other departments, you know, you're always looking for people that are, you know, exemplary in their communication styles, and they bring a certain advantage to the company. And so when you get a resume, you know, or a CV, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to look very common that will make them eligible to speak with you or to speak with another hiring manager. But now they're in front of you and they're sharing their story and they're answering your questions and there's no piece of paper anymore. Like, it's just you and them. I'm curious to know, what are like three qualities or three characteristics that you look for in these types of conversations with individuals to recognize that this person would be a phenomenal fit for within our group? Or if that's not the case, maybe some things that you look for in your current team today where you think, this person already has what this organization needs in a different area. We need to promote this person now because they are already able to demonstrate success for us.
Some things that really stand out. So the first thing I look for, and I may call it a spark, you know, a sense of energy. You know, healthcare, you know, patient care, you know, contemporary business. You know, it's hard. You know, organizations are complex. You know, our goals are difficult. You know, I'm looking for someone who has, you know, just enough energy to be able to, you know, meet those challenges head on and still, you know, have some fuel in the tank, as it were, right? So I definitely look for kind of a spark or, you know, a sense of energy there. The other thing, you know, can you identify a problem? But more importantly, if you're identifying a problem, are you able to start thinking about potential solutions to that problem? And I think that's a critical difference, and not everyone can do that. You know, I think I've had a lot of people in my past who were exceptionally good at pointing out, you know, the issues or the problems, right? So they would show them to me. And it's rare. Well, more rare that you have someone that has already started thinking about potential solutions. I don't even need them to be right all the time. Just the fact that you are starting to invest in potential solutions and just thinking about them, you know, to me is a key differentiator. And that's really, you know, one of those items that, you know, helps along that leadership journey, right? If you're only the sign telling me that the danger exists, I mean, you're helpful, but you're a sign telling me, you know, that the hazard exists. You're not helping me understand how we might work together to, you know, to get around that. And then I think the third thing, you know, does that person show some signs of what I'll call personal investment and lifelong learning. You know, I think back, you know, and to bring this back to a pharmacist lens, you know, when you and I graduated pharmacy school, you know, we were fresh, right? We had all of this knowledge and we had all of this motivation. Think about how many pharmaceuticals have been invented and marketed that weren't even thought of when you and I graduated, right? And
it's pretty mind-blowing too.
Yeah, and for other healthcare professionals that may be watching this, I mean, the same could extend to surgical techniques, to medical devices, you know, to therapeutic interventions that, you know, are non-drug. You know, the march of progress is relentless and continuous. And the only way that you are going to remain up to date, you know, and relevant is investing in your own, you know, lifelong learning. So I would say those three things are key for me. And when I see those in a candidate or when I see those in a member of my own team, you know, I know that they've got a lot of those foundational pieces that, you know, will help them, you know, as they continue down that path.
I love your definitions and I love the way that you've been able to help me in this conversation recognize like the value that you would see in each of them. Because I have a tendency to hear from a lot of people, and it's not necessarily a guest by say, but when I speak with individuals, they're quick to point out the three things, but not the rationale behind them, not the application of why these are important and how they will be used in future, you know, conversations and partnerships and collaboration. So that this was really helpful in that space, Vic. We've had such a great conversation. I've learned a lot from you. I've learned, you know, so many different shades of the professional that you are, the people that have helped you, and the way that you help others and try to make things better for the world. You know, one of the things I always ask my guests is to share any advice that they may have for those, whether they are healthcare professionals or healthcare executives that are looking to continue their professional journey. You know, is there a piece of advice that you would share to somebody that is either, you know, struggling to figure out how to break out of their doldrums and move into either a new space or something within their vertical and a higher level, or something that you felt has been a strong indicator of success for yourself that you have used time and time again, that has proven itself to be invaluable in your professional journey?
Yeah, a couple of things that stand out for me. Be open to saying yes, even if the payback isn't always clear. You know, I think back, there were a couple of key milestones along the way where I was presented with an opportunity. And I knew that I would learn more coming out of it than going in, but it wasn't necessarily tied to a promotion or, you know, there wasn't a guarantee of anything other than, you know, I would learn something new, right? I would develop another skill. And I would like to think that in a couple of those cases, it was simply my willingness to say yes through, you know, improving myself, you know, and improving my knowledge that then later, you know, potentially opened up, you know, career opportunities. I think that sometimes, you know, and I understand, you know, we look at things somewhat transactionally, right? If I do this, you know, I will get promoted. And those opportunities happen, but sometimes there's a lateral opportunity that simply exposes you to, you know, new skills or new teams or, you know, new ways of, you know, flexing your, you know, your leadership muscles, as it were. But you're not making more money. You're not necessarily getting a title, you know, bump. And, you know, it's okay, you know. If you're learning something new and you're becoming a more well-rounded person coming out of it, it may be worthwhile to say yes in those circumstances. The other thing I think that's important, and this one's a little harder, and I think we talked about having good mentors around you, you know, friends, colleagues, what have you. Occasionally take inventory of your skills and your motivators and those things that also, you know, can distract or derail you. Because I think, I don't know that we do this often enough, right? Where we maybe sit quietly and think about, you know, what are parts of the current role that I hold that I really love, right? That if you told me I couldn't do those things anymore, or if I was moved into a role where, you know, I had less opportunity to do those things, that I would not be as happy, you know, remember those things. And then what are those things that, you know, they may frustrate you. You may feel they don't contribute to the overall, you know, sense of who you are or where you want your career to go. And while you can't always get rid of those, sometimes you can identify those as potential derailers and then perhaps put some strategies in place to at least, you know, maybe react a bit differently, right, to them. So they're not quite as corrosive, let's say. That's a lot harder to do, but I think if you're able to occasionally take stock, you know, what are you good at? What do you really like to do? And then what are those things that really, you know, in a way set you off, you know, in a negative way? And, you know, put a strategy together to try to work on both, right? Try to find ways to amplify those things that motivate you, and also try to put some strategies around helping, you know, cope, let's say, with those things that may be derailers.
Vic, I completely 100% ascribe to that philosophy. I've always told my clients in the past that you need to make time to do three things. You need to make time to review and take stock, as you pointed out. You need to take time once you've done the review to reflect on it, right? Because you can write down all the things that you think are, you know, were moments that really could have been responded to differently. But without the reflection, it's problematic. And then you need to take time to rewrite the way that you're going to move yourself forward. And so to hear that from you, Vic, it's actually validation for myself as well. So I appreciate that as well. And Vic, you know, I'm so glad that you said yes. I'm very, very honored and appreciative of the fact that you were on the show today. I'm very confident the listeners of this episode are going to glean a lot of great insights from you, and really just looking forward to seeing you succeed, you know, in the upcoming year, especially with your certification. But I'll always continue to look forward to having more conversations with you, and certainly hope that you and I will get a chance to see how things progress. And as always, I'm wishing you much success and looking forward to seeing you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Well, Iqbal, you're too kind. I mean, I hope that, you know, some of the information is helpful. You know, this the honor's been mine. I'm glad to be able to participate here and hopefully help some people on their journey. So thanks very much.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.